email eventually. A bit busy right now. Good morning, everybody. The motto of the Los Angeles Police Department is to protect and serve, but the LAPD hasn't always delivered. The most famous example, of course, is Rodney King, the Los Angeles man beaten by four LA cops in 1991 in an attack widely believed to be racially motivated. Now, the Rodney King and other scandals led to federal oversight of the LAPD, but now the LAPD says that it has served its time, dealt with its problems, and it's time to end oversight. So is the LAPD ready to police again on its own? Not a question I'm going to answer, but a question that our two guests will do. Mark Rosenblum, he's the legal director of the ACLU of Southern California, one of the lawyers in federal court seeking to extend the consent decree involving the LAPD, and Chris Stone, criminal justice professor at Harvard University. And Chris wrote a nine-month study on the LAPD that came out last month. Good morning to you both, gentlemen. Let me start with Mark. Mark, can you just say, just set out for us, just briefly, why the Justice Department decided oversight was necessary?
The consent decree was entered in 2001 after a decade of incidents of police misconduct. The 1991 Rodney King beating that you mentioned, there was also a scandal in 1999 known as the Rampart Scandal, where police officers were found stealing illegal drugs, framing gang members, and committing extortion. The department opened up an investigation of the LAPD and found a systematic pattern and practice of police misconduct, of civil rights violations, of improper use of force, of improper officer-involved shootings, improper stops and seizures and arrests, and based on that, filed a lawsuit, and that's what resulted in the consent decree.
Now, practically for the LAPD, what does it actually mean in terms of their day-to-day business?
The consent decree has resulted in significant reform with respect to the issues that we're talking about, or at least several of those issues. But 8 years later, the department remains out of compliance with at least seven categories of the provisions of the consent decree. Most importantly, what you started to talk about, and that was racially biased stops, racially biased use of force, racially biased policing. So the department still has serious ways to go. As it turns out in Los Angeles, if you're African-American, you're three times more likely to be stopped by the police than if you're white. You're 166% more likely to be ordered out of your car, to be frisked, to be asked for consensual searches, notwithstanding the fact that even after those stops and frisks take place, the likelihood, if you're black, of being found with criminal weapons or drugs or other evidence is significantly less than whites, 42% less than whites,
right,
for example, in the area of frisk.
Okay, Mark, let me leave you there for one moment. Let me bring in Chris Stone, criminal justice professor at Harvard University. Chris, you spent 9 months studying the LAPD. Mark has just reeled off a lot of statistics about the LAPD, particularly when it comes to racial bias. But what did you find?
We found the department had changed a lot, as Mark said, over the 8 years of the consent decree. We found basically the public confidence, trust and confidence in the LAPD is way up. About 83% of LA residents now rate the LAPD as doing a good or excellent job. And importantly, that includes about more than two-thirds, more than 70% of black residents and Hispanic residents. Right across the board, we found increased confidence, increased satisfaction with the LAPD's job. But we also found that they were doing a better job, that the law enforcement activities, the stops, the arrests, there are more of them, but they're of a higher quality. We found morale was up. We found police-community relations were strengthened. In general, we found the use of force was down, which is really important in this context. There are still lots of problems in the LAPD, as there are in almost every police organization in the United States. The question is whether the federal court oversight is still necessary. And in that sense, we also found that the other oversight in L.A., the oversight by L.A. institutions, which is crucial, was beginning to pick up and work well. And it's really to give those mechanisms a chance to really govern the LAPD and protect people's rights that we ended up concluding the LAPD was ready to have the federal court monitoring end.
Well, is this a political ploy by William Bratton, former New York cop, who's the commissioner of the LAPD, if he can get the feds off the neck of the police department, he would benefit, right?
Well, I'm not sure. I mean, he certainly doesn't benefit personally. I think it's a. I think it is certainly something a police department wants. Think about Chrysler or GM. You know, if you weren't able to come out of bankruptcy, you'd never go in. And the system we have in this country is when the federal government intervenes, what they try to do is get a department to cooperate and enter a consent decree, go under federal oversight voluntarily. And police departments are never going to do that in this country if you can't get out of bankruptcy, if you can't come out of federal control. And the way you come out is you don't become perfect, you become able to govern yourself.
Actually, what I would say is that the way you come out of a consent decree is that you comply with the consent decree, and that hasn't taken place yet. The most recent monitor's report, the federal monitor that the that Judge Feist employs to look at the behavior of the department, still finds the department deficient, including especially in areas of racial biasing. And Professor Stone's report, which is quite expertly done, nonetheless found, for example, and I'm quoting from it, a troubling pattern in the use of force in that African Americans and to a lesser extent Hispanics are still subject to the use of force way out of proportion to their share of contacts with the LAPD.
Gentlemen, I'm going to thank you for joining us this morning. We knew that you had different opinions. Thank you for sharing them with us. We have Mark Rosenbaum. He's the legal director of the ACLU of Southern California. And also Chris Stone from the Guggenheim. He's a Guggenheim professor of criminal justice at Harvard University. Gentlemen, thank you very much indeed. Mark Garrison, time for some news headlines.
Thank you, Femi. 29 minutes after the hour.
I'm David Remnick, host of the New Yorker Radio Hour. There's nothing like finding a story you can really sink into that lets you tune out the noise and focus on what matters. In print or here on the podcast, The New Yorker brings you thoughtfulness and depth and even humor that you can't find anywhere else. So please join me every week for The New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.